Mr. Jones and me tell each other fairy tales and everybody will assume.
There's no way I'm not leaving this in the recording.
That would have been me. No, no, no. It's listen to me and Mr. Jones and me tell each other riddles too. And everybody hurts you, Mr. Jones.
You're listening to The Dollop on the All Things Comedy Network. This is a bilingual American history podcast where each week I, Dave Anthony, read a story from American history to my friend.
Mr. Jones and me. Oh, sorry. Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is going to be about.
Now, on a personal note, have they opened Jose's school up again?
They have, but he still wants to do online. He likes to be home. He wants to do online classes still.
So is that permanent? Like, is he making a permanent switch? Or and what
I think
happens?
I'm gonna homeschool him.
What happens with an online cat class?
When you take it's you know I mean it's you have the instructor and then the other cats and you know they just go through different. Things they have to learn about why you claw the walls, what's inside the walls, and why do you climb them?
Mm-hmm.
Why does wicker feel so good on your nails,
mm-hmm.
Your claws, and things like that? How to lick your butt and how to still feel like you can if you can't get there perfect. Like if you're still like a centimeter short, even though you've been losing weight for a couple years, and you still can't fully get tongue to b-hole connection. How to not feel shame about that. That's Jose's in that class.
So there's no math?
There's no math.
And called it, quote, his jam pad.
Jam pad?
I'm the fucking hippo guy.
Dave, okay.
My name's Gary.
My name's Gary.
Wait.
Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the Tickling Podcast.
Okay.
This is like anarchy.
On a five-part coefficient.
My room is blank.
Now hit him with the puppy. You both present sick arguments.
No sleep till hippo.
No sleep till hippo.
Action part.
Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
Rhoda. Rhoda at the court.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need, and then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. And we're brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of things have changed out there in the business world. A lot of people are like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to find a new way to make a living. I want to find a way to run my own life and handle my own emotional well-being and not have to deal with a boss. I want my own business. Setting up a business can be hard, right? It can be very difficult, it can be confusing, and Zen Business is there for you. It can guide you, give you the essential skills and the resources to help you start and grow your business while you're balancing just, you know, keeping yourself feeling good and okay. And look, if you have a great business idea, it's very exciting, but then you're like, now what? Now, well, I don't know how to do all the business stuff. You don't have to be a business expert to start a business. There are people there to help you, and Zen Business empowers you to turn your awesome idea into a money-making company. Personally, I use Zen Business to keep compliant with all the state and the annual filings, all the stuff. I totally forget about it. And Zen Business can stay on top of it for me, which is great. Keep the business in good standing so I'm not getting in any trouble. Look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop.
Now it's your time to just shout some time. Shout a time. I can do it. I just don't think it's going to be in line with... all right, just let me know if I'm close or not. September 6th, 1891.
No,
year of our Lord, cheese and crackers.
You're in the wrong century.
February 2nd, 880.
What just happened? Hey, we're not going to start the podcast until you get the date right.
Oh, shit. This is Rumpelstiltskinny. It's 9 days later. Is it June? Did I already say June 7th, 1971? You did. Did I say June 5th? No. Yeah. Is it? No.
Oh. I told you to write these down. I don't even have an exact date. 1920s! La, 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 la. A backlash against immigrants grew, as often happens in the United States of America.
USA.
So people were calling for limitations on immigration, and U.S. farmers responded to calls for limiting immigration from Mexico by aggressively lobbying to allow it to continue.
Okay. Great.
Was that Jose at the door?
I think it might. If you heard it, then yes.
Yeah, it sounded like a scratchy.
I wasn't sure if I just have been conditioned to hear clawing when there's not. Was that it again?
Yeah, it sounded like it.
Fun thing we do. We play this game where he claws at the door and ruins it.
Yeah.
And and I play my role of
sitting. Well, everyone missed the fight, but they had a fight earlier.
It was an
argument.
I had to throw him out.
Yeah. Farmers said they would not be able to harvest their crops without Mexican labor. At the time, a lot of Mexicans came legally. Some did not, obviously. But when the Great Depression arrived, anger rose even more against the migrant workers, as you can imagine.
Of course. Yes, Liz, we have a proud history losing our shit.
At the wrong people.
At the wrong people.
Look. I've been saying this forever, but anytime the economy falls apart, it's always the fault of the people on the lowest rung.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Jeez, I got to handle Jose.
Oh, here they go. The boys are fighting again. Okay. Is he back in?
Don't worry about what's going on. Let's just stick to the show, okay?
So he won? The cat won?
Look, there's no winners. There's no losers. Let's just do the show like we just always do. Can you just knock it off already?
Who's the dominant in that house?
Sometimes the dominant has to choose to be the submissive to keep the continuity of dominance. Wouldn't understand it.
I just didn't know. I didn't know the power dynamic there.
It's not that there's a power dynamic. Just relax. You wouldn't get it.
Are you a switch?
God damn it. He wants to go out.
Now he wants out. What an asshole. Oh, my God. You just got so bossed around.
All right. Okay, come on. Let's Mr. Jones and me. Back to the top.
So the Mexicans become the scapegoat, and many return to Mexico anyway, since there's no work during the Great Depression. A lot more are deported at the same time. And then came World War II. Millions of Americans have to go overseas to fight. And then suddenly there's a huge concern about labor shortage. Everyone's like, who's going to do the work? All the dudes are going.
Well, thank God that we kicked the Mexicans out for taking those jobs that we're now rejecting.
Hey, remember a couple years ago we told y'all to fuck off? I would like you to come back now, America.
Yeah. That is basically the dance we keep doing, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, so I've been thinking about some of the stuff we were saying before, and well, I reckon we probably lost our temper a little bit in your direction. Maybe
Yeah.
A little more than we should, so.
Yeah, it was not great. I got to be honest.
Here we are, hat in hand, saying, we're sorry. Will you come
help
our
it's pretty hard
get back on track?
Well, all the stuff you said last time, not great.
Yeah.
Scumbags. We're dirty. We're lazy. Well, we're filthy.
Some of that's taken completely out of context as far as what I was saying. You are a scumbag, you know, so I just... very sorry again if that defended. But didn't it's where we come from? Scumbags are helpful things. They are it helps get your scum collected. So when we say scumbag, we are complimenting the ingenuity of the bag of scum, because it used to be. It used to be that scum was everywhere, scattered scum, scummy scum, and you'd go, "Oh, well, what are we gonna do with all scum?" And someone would go, "I don't know. What are we gonna do? Just maybe put in a pile, make a scum pile, till someone finally made a bag to put the scum in. And when we did that, we went, well, looky here. Now I've got a clean floor, devoid of scum. All thanks to my handy dandy friend here, the scumbag. So I'm reckoning that you're fixated on the wrong thing. It was a compliment. Scumbag. You say that all the time over here. That guy's a hell of a guy. One of my best scumbags. So.
You called me a piece of shit also.
Well, where I come from, a piece of shit is a compliment. Because the shit is a, you know what I mean? It's a shit. It's a good to have. It's shit can be utilized.
You just stop talking.
When some.
Okay.
Please come back and save our world.
So, millions of women end up joining the workforce, most of them in the defense industry, and then others leave farm work to go work in the defense industry. So now, who's going to harvest the crops? Right. So the U.S. goes to Mexico, asking to make a deal for laborers. A lot of Mexicans don't even believe the U.S. has a labor shortage and just think the U.S. is trying to get cheap workers. But the Mexican government thinks they can help the war effort and benefit economically at the same time by agreeing to a worker deal. So Mexico declares war on the Axis powers on June 1st, 1942. And then the next month, the Becerro program is established. Now, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, right.
The program, Operation Wetback episode.
Abysmal program, right?
You know, not great, not great. Right. The Bracero program is where Mexican workers are brought to the U.S. to work on farms and railroads. Literally, Bracero means one who uses his arms. It means manual laborer in Mexico.
Right.
So it's right. Literally, you're just saying basically the
you're
manual.
You're being very clear. Which is nice. It is not. I do think that we should pass some sort of legislation that makes, like, there should be like a title czar, you know.
I agree.
In charge of
just the titles.
Yeah, just as like No Child Left Behind is not what this is. You know, just that person is.
It's never what it says. It's always the opposite.
Never. No, it's always like, you know, even when it comes to food. Like if you bought like a bag of Doritos and it was gnocchi, you'd be like, "What the fuck? Give me my money back." But for some reason, when it comes to like bills and laws, they're like, no, you can totally just whatever wrapping you want to put on your turd.
So the deal was employers would pay for transportation and living expenses. And right. The language of it prohibits discrimination. Recruitment centers open in Juarez and Chihuahua and different places on the border. And many thousands of Mexicans flocked to the centers because you needed to get a work permit to be a part of the Bracero program.
Okay.
But then that meant a lot of Mexicans couldn't get it. There ended up being a lot of, like, you had to bribe and do all this shit. So they're still coming in illegally. They're still like, fuck it. This isn't worth the shit. I just want a fucking job.
Right.
But pretty soon reports come out of the Braceros being discriminated against, not being paid, not being fed, terrible living conditions. Everything the program is supposed to, you know.
Yeah. Help.
Not make happen, right? So many Braceros go on strike And then, so it's a problem. And then World War II ends, and there's a lot of pressure to end the Bracero program because all these soldiers are coming back.
Hey, we just randomly are changing everything again. Just totally unrelated to them coming back.
Hey, remember all that stuff I said? I was talking about how scumbags, NASA, and everything. I looked over everything, and fuck you again. Fuck you.
By the way, you bought the scumbag rap, but you're stupid because a scumbag is a bad thing. We don't, we hate scumbags. Woo! USA.
Of course, the agriculture industry lobbies for the government to continue it. And
yes.
Of course, they win. But the rules became even more lax. So things got so bad that braceros are eating banana peels, melon rinds, and even newspapers to survive.
Oh my God.
So then
how is that even, does that do something? Eating newspaper is enough to keep you going?
I think it just fills you up so you're not in pain.
Oh fucking A, God, what a horrendous answer.
Thank you. So yeah, it's not great. So Mexico ends it. They're like, we're done. 1948, they're like, we're fucking out. This is terrible.
Right.
So Congress gets lobbied again, and they pass a law assuring workers would be protected. And then Mexico returns to the Bracero program in 1951.
Hey, guess who? Howdy who? Hey.
Are you doing something different? Are you working out?
Nope.
Look so...
No, I'm the same. I'm the same as I've always been.
More hair.
I haven't changed at all.
Arms
at all.
Are tougher.
No. I'm the same. I'm the same.
Okay. Good to see you. I'm not coming to do anything. I just wanted to just randomly. Oh. Are you good? Just wanted to see if you're good.
Back, not back really. No. I'm not great.
Okay. Well,
I'm not a fan. I got to be honest.
I just wanted to say something. Just to let you know that the last time when I was explaining the scumbag was not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember.
I was changing reality to just, I was drunk first. I'd been drinking a lot around that time. And a scumbag, again, is a great thing.
It is
a great thing.
Yeah, do you remember mocking me, saying how stupid I was for believing that it was a good thing?
But no, the alcohol was. I was poisoned by a gang to be drunk that day, and I know. I don't expect you to believe it or forgive it, but a bunch of men put rum in me and drunk me, and so I just wanted to say that I feel bad, and I just want to say sorry. So I'll see you later. I don't need.
Okay, bye.
Also, if you wanted to maybe to just turn a new page, come over and pick some stuff again, that would be, you know, give you a shot.
So I'm so angry. I'm just angry, you know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm pissed too. They just don't
what?
Get
why?
It.
Why would you be pissed?
They don't get it.
Who's they? It's you.
The system is just a joke to guys like us. The same, basically, guys. You and me, and the system's put its boot on our necks. No, thank you. God, pisses me off. Scumbags like us, good people, good scumbags.
I will take this job if you shut the fuck up.
Great, that's all I'm looking for. Great, yes. Let's not do this again. That's the goal.
So Mexico comes back to the program in 1951. The law also prohibits them from unionizing, striking, or negotiating for higher pay.
What? It's just, I mean, it is an abusive relationship.
Yeah, it is. As usual, there's another backlash against immigrants. In 1954, the U.S. engaged in Operation Wetback, which is a massive program to deport Mexican workers. But the Bracero program continues throughout all this. And you can listen to our Operation Wetback episode. It's very uplifting.
Yes.
in the mid-60s, when baby boomers are starting to hit working age, there's this huge concern there won't be enough jobs for these young boomers turning 18, right. 19.
Okay.
And that turns more Americans against the Bracero program than ever before.
So, right. So they've... it's very strange how it works, Dave. It seems... one could call it completely selfish.
Again, farmers are saying their crops will rot in the fields if there's no Mexican laborers. So it's literally the same argument we've been having
since
the 20s.
Get out, you scumbags! I was lying again. It's the old double fib back around Z. Scumbag is a bad thing. Beep, beep, beep. We don't need it. Yeah.
So William Willard Wirtz was born in 1912. William Willard Wirtz. It's the most fucked up name to give a kid. It's just fucked.
Yeah. He's from the alliteration part of town.
He's born in 1912. His father was a college coach, both football and basketball. Wirtz goes to Northwestern Illinois University and then Harvard Law School. He becomes a professor at Northwestern Illinois. Then he serves on the War Labor Board, which is, they like, if there's any labor disputes during the war, there's a special board to deal with it, because they're like, wartime, we can't have disputes, because that's coming out of World War One, where the Wobblies realized how much power they had, and they were shutting down shipbuilding and weapons and, you know.
So they're essentially like, no change during war times.
That's correct. The time when you would most want to possibly enact change, we can't have it. Because
nope, not now.
We're all for this war. Oh, but we're not for the war. We don't think we should kill our fellow leftists. that's kind of how wars work.
This is awkward.
That's how wars work. So... He ends up becoming an active Democrat. In 1961, he was appointed labor secretary. So he comes in, and this is 61, so he immediately faces this issue of what to do with farm labor. You got all these boomers coming of age.
Need jobs. Farmers telling you don't do this again.
That's right. So because of public pressure, the Bracero program officially ends by Congress letting it expire on December 31st, 1964. So they just don't re-up it. It's just dead.
Let it go. Okay.
So Wirtz then, the next day, rules foreign workers could not be brought into the U.S. unless farmers could prove they couldn't get American workers if they offered them a decent wage. He's basically saying, raise the amount of money you pay workers, and Americans will take the jobs. That's what he's saying.
Right. And farmers are going like, yes, but the bottom line thing.
Yeah, but so he also raises the minimum wage for farm laborers from $1.25 to $1.40 an hour. Not a lot, but I think back then a lot more, obviously. The spokesman for California citrus and avocado growers called the increase, quote, an intolerable economic burden.
Okay.
So Wirtz said there were enough U.S. farm workers. He says, there's enough. We actually don't need to bring anybody in. And that the agriculture corporations are just not recruiting them.
Yes, exactly. That's the problem.
So the governor of California pushed Wirtz to let in 5,100 workers for crops that immediately needed to be harvested. So now we're at the point now where crops are just sitting there. They need to be harvested. No one's anything.
We got 10 white guys. They have pretty bad attitudes, but they said they'll do it. That's not enough.
So in late March, Wirtz flies to California to tour farms with the governor. And they get on Air Force plane, and they fly over the state for 4 days, stopping and meeting with farmers and union officials and workers. The Vancouver Sun, quote, Wirtz discovered to his astonishment that the growers complained little about the higher pay scale. With considerable frankness, many said the Mexicans worked harder and didn't talk back.
Yeah. I mean,
I think people will take any work they can get at this point.
At this point in America?
In any point in American history.
Okay.
I think that what's happening here is the farmers can treat the Mexican workers so badly because they don't have any legal protections that's what they want.
Okie dokie. lucky.
One farmer told Wirtz, quote, "We're frightened and desperate. We're afraid to plant crops for fear they'll rot on the vine." Wirtz keeps telling them to hire U.S. workers and pay them more.
Okay.
So all it's coming down to is the farmers are now saying, I can't do this. I need to bring in people for cheap labor. And the guy who's in charge of labor in the United States, of overseeing this shit, is saying, yeah, you can. You can afford it.
So, okay. Interesting.
So he goes to the fields and he meets laborers. One teaches him how to use an asparagus hoe. So, like, he's learning how hard, because it's actually really hard. They don't give them a big hoe. They give them a little tiny hoe, so they have to bend over. Like, it's you know, so they save a few bucks.
So you get hoe back.
Hoe back. Yeah, that's what it was, basically. UPI, quote, Wirtz viewed laborers eating sack lunches in the field. So there's some fun stuff going on, too.
Wait, well, I don't understand.
This is from the UPI story. Quote, Wirtz viewed laborers eating sack lunches in the field. So he just watched some guys.
He's just watching guys eat?
Yeah, he watched some guys eat lunch.
Very creepy. It's like a fetish. It's like an OnlyFans.
At the end of the tour, 4-day tour, he said, quote, I think a great majority of Americans would be willing to pay an additional quarter cent a pound for celery to eliminate the present working conditions in the fields. So they estimated that if they paid workers more, the increase is less than a cent. It's totally nothing.
Right. Right.
And that's what's stopping
that people. That right. So the idea being that you give people, you know, you're going to make a better existence for people, and people will pay a little bit more. And he's like, people will go for that problem.
Yeah. Because it's not that much.
No. Because
when it's spread out over all the heads of lettuce, it actually doesn't turn out to be that much money.
Right. Okay.
Wirtz called for wages of farm workers to increase 50%. So he's like, look, you guys are making enough money that you can pay these people 50% more.
Okay. And they go along with that, obviously.
But then he ended up approving 1,500 Mexican workers to come to California in May and 6,500 West Indians to go to Florida to pick oranges and sugarcane. So he's still like, okay, I get
sometimes.
It. I'm going to let some in. But again, you got to do something. He's like saying, you got to do something. I'm going to let these guys in so the crops don't rot. But again, you got to do something.
Right. Okay.
But more crops would be ready soon. And the farmers said that number wasn't adequate. Wirtz said the answer was making the job better. Quote, we have been downgrading agricultural labor for years by putting it in inhuman housing. So he's saying the conditions, the material conditions you're providing for the workers is getting worse and worse and worse. So maybe that's part of the reason that Americans don't want to work there. Because you're going as far down as you possibly can. It's not just the work.
And they... Well, and also that they now have, like, I mean, you're yes, but the farmer's like, but there are people we could exploit. And he's like, yeah, but don't do that. Don't do that.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, May 5th, Wirtz announces a new program that would be the solution to everyone's problem.
Robots.
The Athletes in Temporary Employment as Agricultural Manpower Program.
What? So he's like, we've got the best athletes here.
That's, yes.
Yeah.
AP, quote, the government launched a drive Tuesday to recruit some 20,000 high school boys to work on the nation's farms this summer.
Wow. So... Okay, so basically it's like, all right, are we going to learn track this summer? Why, no, not at all. This summer you're going to compete in a new sport. What's it called? Picking. You ever played picking?
Strawberry picking.
You got to pick strawberries. We're going to have 5 games where you're going to go head-to-head against other high school teams, and we're going to see who can get the most strawberry points by picking them and putting them in a basket.
What?
So we're going to... What's the question? What? Why are you crying?
No,
what's the matter?
I thought that maybe this summer I was going to do lifeguard stuff or...
Life? What? We're going to compete in picking the sport.
You guys understand? This is huge. There's a future in this.
I don't think that's a sport. That's just all I'm
it
saying.
It is a sport, not with that attitude, but we're going to go head-to-head against other schools. Now, who wants to be center picker? Who wants to play right pick? And then we're going to need a pick field. Yeah.
I don't want to be a teenager anymore.
Well, all right. You're going to not start. Your attitude is really weak and terrible.
It just got really bad. That's all.
Guys, everyone. We're picking. It's a new sport. Everyone's doing it. Come on.
I'm crying.
Jesus Christ. It's not going over well with the students.
So, look, the reason for this is it's going to solve the high summer teen unemployment. I mean, all of a sudden, these boomers are all coming of age. And then the farm labor shortage at the same time, right? They see it. They're like, look, we got workers here. We need workers here. Let's do it. Wirtz nicknamed the program the A-Team.
All right. Okay.
And then when he announces it, he has baseball great Stan Musial next to him, Cleveland Browns running back Jim Brown, and Mets pitcher William Spahn. So he surrounds himself with these big, amazing athletes and gives the press conference. Mostly they just stood next to him and nodded. I think one of them said it was a great way for high school athletes to stay in shape during the summer.
Sure, yes, it for sure is. Absolutely.
The idea is that their coaches will go with them and oversee them, and then they'd practice in their off hours when they weren't picking.
The more I hear about this idea, the worse it gets. I mean, it is crazy. So the idea, obviously you like where Wirtz's head is at, but the idea that you're like, you know, and instead of cheap labor, we'll just use these students and not pay them. That seems pretty better. That's pretty better, right? That's nice and pretty better.
The AP quote, the Labor Department said it will insist that growers provide good housing and food for youths who will be under close supervision during their sojourn on the farm.
Well, honey, I got to go coach my team to pick peas. See you later.
So I think what he's thinking is, and I could be wrong about this, but this is the way it comes across. I think he's thinking that because they're going to take these American teen athletes, that it's going to force the farmers to provide better housing and everything else. I think he's like, well, they won't be able to get away with it.
I wonder why they would do that. I wonder what's happening. Yeah. Okay. So now they're like, so he's basically like, all right, I will now give you like the white youth and force your hand into, because you know that their parents will go apeshit because.
Yeah. He's addressing the clear racism and that's involved in this. So.
It's a pretty good move. Now it is a good move.
Well.
Okie dokie. Here we go. Keep going, Dave.
Besides calling it the A-Team, Wirtz revealed the program slogan, Farm Work Builds Men. So you want your boy to be a man? Send him to work on a farm. And everyone in America is like, hell, that sounds right.
Well, it sounds like he's trying to insinuate that Joseph will not be a man. And Joseph will be a man. Joseph will therefore go and pick corn for the summer. Hey, Joseph, yeah? You're going to go pick corn for the summer. What? God, sounds horrible. Why? Because you're going to become a man. Otherwise, this guy, who I don't know, his name's Wirtz, he's going to think you're not a man. I'm not a man. Shut up. Come on. You're going to go pick corn all summer.
So high schools are supposed to contact employment offices in their state to find out which farms needed workers. And then they put them all in touch with each other, and then 20 or 30, quote, athletic boys from a school would go out to a farm and work. And the farm wasn't supposed to be more than 350 miles away. Wirtz made it very clear he wanted jocks. He's like, this is for jocks. This is jock work.
Right. Yes. Oh, boy. So this, are we just in a loophole off?
Well, I mean, the problem with that thinking is real jocks, like the really good athletes, are the most pampered kids in a society in America. Like, they're the ones that really, in truth, are have really emotionally stunted development-wise because they get everything they want, right? I mean, that's the real American.
Yeah. Yes.
So he says, Wirt says, quote, they can do the work. They are entitled to a chance at it. So he's trying to make it like they... They're entitled. They should get this opportunity to work to work picking strawberries.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we just cut to Johnny Manziel in a field. Just like, wait, what? Wait, what is he mommy, dude? No, he can get fucked is what he can do, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I always, when I think of pampered athletes, I always think of Luis Suarez, who played for Liverpool and Barcelona. Like, he would bite other players because he was a little fucking child, man child. Like,
like, multiple bites.
So Republicans are against it, and some Democrats. At this point, it's a very if you supported farmers and farming, it was really dependent on the state you were from. So there's a lot of Democrats that are also in this. But Florida Senator, this is the craziest name, Sepsard Holland.
Sure.
Did not like
Sepsard?
S-E-P-S-S-A-R-D.
How can you make a sepsis sound like an erection? I've got a way. Sepsard.
That's my boy.
Yes. Well, we couldn't agree on a name, so we just threw some Scrabble letters on the floor and put them together, and this is now our son, Sepsard. So.
He's great.
He's really good.
So,
Sepsard, take the bucket off your head, bud.
Sepsard did not like, quote, this isn't the answer to Florida's problems. Maybe they need football players in the West or East. We need them on the gridiron when it's the height of our vegetable season. So he's like, why are you taking our football boys away? That's his argument right now. Why are you taking away our football players?
Like, what, you know what we need is to learn what need means. We need them playing football.
Others said Americans would just not do it. Representative E.C. Gathings, quote, you cannot depend on Skid Row people to work in the harvest of perishables.
What?
So he's giving away so much with this statement. He's just basically saying the pay is so fucking bad that the only people that will do it are people who live on Skid Row. It's just coming out with it.
It's a very revealing thing to say.
Yeah.
I don't think much of anybody.
So the government starts a PR campaign. Ads on the radio, the ads in magazines, newspapers.
Have you played picking? The new sport that's taking over the summer. That's right. If you've got a son or daughter who's athletic, why, send them to picking. Oh, boy. Listen to these testimonials. I would really love to have a summer. That's right. This could be you. Join us for picking all summer at any farm that needs them. Send your children, 14 to 17. It's time for picking.
I thought I was just going to swim in the lake this summer.
Yeah, you're not going to swim in the lake. You're going to learn what it's like to actually cultivate your own fruits and vegetables. That's right. You thought throwing a screen pass was difficult or a Hail Mary. Have you ever tried irrigating? Join us for picking this summer. Everyone's having a lot of fun.
In one ad, 1964 Heisman Trophy winner yells, quote, farm work builds men. So they're just getting all these.
I'm on my way to college.
I'm going to make a ton of money in playing pro football. You go work on a farm.
Two years removed from high school being like, hey, I'm telling you, I would do it if I were you guys. It's like bullshit.
Farms keep pushing to get the Braceros back. They said Americans would never do the brutal work. I'm sure it had nothing to do with farm workers historically being excluded from labor laws. So they are excluded from, and still today, there's a lot of exclusions for laborers. They just aren't included in shit in our labor laws. All the laws that are like keeping people safe and healthy and making sure they're paid well, they're just excluded. They're just not a part of it. It's a thing that we do.
Always been our deal.
Because it's brutal work. So, Wirtz just keeps responding that Americans would do it if the farms paid enough. So he just sticks to his argument, and they keep complaining. He keeps saying, we'll pay more, and workers will come.
Mm-hmm.
Wirtz said the increase in prices would only be about 1 cent for a head of lettuce or, you know, whatever, any sort of thing that was picked. So Michigan Pickle Farms said they were 1,000 workers short, even though they had planted fewer crops in 1964. So one of the things that happened was, as soon as this looked like it was coming, all of the farms started planting less.
Okay, right.
And that's what Michigan Pickle Farm, Cucumber Pickle Farms did.
And the goal of that is to have, I mean, what is there? Is the goal there to show that, like, yeah, what are they trying to do?
I think the goal is to, well, if you plant less, then you're not paying to grow as much, and it doesn't cost you as much.
So it is. It's more precautionary for your business versus trying to make a point to Wirtz.
I think it's both.
Okay. Okay. All right. I get it.
One farmer said Americans just wouldn't pick the way Mexicans did. Quote, the Latins are built for the job. They're used to stooping in the fields all day, and they're used to the heat. You can't get Americans to do the same thing. Now, can you imagine an American working in a brutal job? Has that ever happened? Have Americans ever worked in heat? Have Americans ever had tough jobs?
No, that's why we're trying to hold on to coal jobs so much.
So it's just the Latins that are built for it. It's not.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It is also an amazing. It is, again, I mean, just another amazing argument in the history of whites' arguments.
Where it's so racist.
Like, it's a racist. And it also is an admission of like previous abuse. It's like they're used to it. It's just like, yeah, but like we're saying nobody should be used to it. Like, well, they are.
Yeah, well, I mean, what it is they're just more desperate because they have a worse poverty situation. And
they really are like, we can get away with it. Yeah. But what you don't understand is we're getting away with it. Do you understand? So we're very confused as to why you keep coming over here and suggesting that we change our practices when for so long it's just been fine because we can just totally get away with it.
So... I'm sure, yeah, right. This has nothing to do with Mexican workers living in camps close to fields when they're harvesting. So they can be exploited.
They love it. They think it's camping. I hear them all the time. They say it's a family holiday.
So you can literally exploit them more because they're living right next to the field as opposed to an American worker who gets in a car and drives home.
Yeah.
It's literally just there's 2 hours in a day you can make someone work.
Yeah,
more.
If this hadn't happened, they would try to be convincing them to sleep in ears of corn. They'd be like, just tuck your legs in there a little bit. Do you see how that's kind of like a sleeping bag?
Oh, and the Mexican workers got $1 an hour, and U.S. workers wanted at least $1.25 or $1.40.
Right. So, okay.
Now, in Mexico, the workers are upset. The San Francisco Chronicle quote, meanwhile, at the border, shouting Mexicans who failed to get jobs in California demonstrated noisily yesterday. Not that that's a horribly racist, just shouting Mexicans. Not that they're not justified. They're just shouting.
You know how they get. Shouty.
And noisy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be upset because they want jobs and they're being prevented from working the jobs. So Wirtz then allows 1,000 workers in on May 20th after a panel of university college professors inspected crops and said, look, these are starting to go bad, or they're about to. Now, the farms are still thousands of workers short, according to them, but thankfully, the A-teams are coming.
Dun, 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 dun. My fingers hurt.
In July... newspapers across the country print photos as proud towns say goodbye to their groups of high schoolers, right, getting on the bus and heading out. Uh-huh. Many, however, are traveling way beyond the 350 miles. That was. I mean, they're going.
It's pretty funny to send like a bunch of white high school kids to like labor camps for the summer and be like, you're doing your patriotic duty, Gregory. And be like, Mom, I'm in Kansas.
The Courier of Iowa printed a photo of teens getting on a bus headed for Salinas, California. Quote, a teacher coach from Cresco will serve as advisor to all 31. So you're looking at it in the paper, and you're like, oh, this seems fine. There's a bunch of smiling kids on a bus, and their coaches with them, and it's going to be like
there's
a summer trip.
He's got a whistle. There's a bag full of basketballs for some reason.
Overall, the press thought it was a very bad idea. Detroit Free Press, quote, dealing with crops which grow close to the ground requires a good deal stronger motive than money or the prospects of a good workout, like, for instance, gnawing hunger.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a Nathan For You episode. This is like, I mean, it really is. I get the point he's making, and it is very interesting to be like, I'll just attack these white people with their children to show them. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, it's not like it's going to, I mean, I highly doubt that it's going to, you're going to see this work.
Yeah. So altogether, 18,100 teenagers signed up for the A teams, but only 3,500 would work in the fields.
Okay.
The Department of Labor said that was partially because states requested migrant workers, but then changed it when the A teams were assigned. So they would be like, I need 5,000. So Iowa pickers. Would be like, look, I need 5,000 right. pickers from Mexico. And then the U.S.
government.
There you
go. You got a bunch of 17-year-olds. And they go, I just need 2,000.
I don't need any. So
I don't need any.
Colorado asked for 6,000 foreign workers, and when the Department of Labor said they would send A teams instead, Colorado withdrew the request for all the workers.
That is quite a rebuff. Yeah, we need 6,400. It's the high school kid thing. Yeah, we're good. We're set. We're not. We don't need any.
So that to me means they're hiring illegally, right? They're not using the Bracero program. That's what I would take that as.
Right. Okay. Right.
So also a lot of kids dropped out because they thought they would be going to California, but when they found out it was somewhere else, they bailed. So like there's kids who are like, oh, I'm in
Hell
Florida.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to California.
Like a beach boy. Yeah. Surf City. Like,
no, it's Michigan.
Gonna be awesome.
It's Michigan.
Yeah. It's Michigan. And there's a lot of thorns around these tomatoes, but
I
was going to meet Bo Derek and, shut up. And guys, remember, use your backs, not your legs. Use your backs, not your legs. Come on.
So, also a lot of kids dropped out because they thought they would be going to California, but when they found out, oh, I already said that. So,
yeah. I can do the bit again.
No, it's all right.
Dude, I'm so excited. Okay.
Now, 17-year-old Randy Carter signed up with 24 San Diego High school classmates. Quote, we thought, I'm not doing anything else this summer. Why not? Now, none of them are athletes. Not one of them. Most of the A team members are not athletes. Because football coaches didn't want players picking celery because they have summer practice.
Yes. All as football, well as, like, yeah.
All
you can
teams,
get injured.
No, yes, but so many teams, especially football teams at this time, they have summer practices. They keep going.
Can you also imagine? I hated school to my bones. I can't imagine over a summer being like, I don't have anything to do, and that being like something I need to fix. Like, that was like the point. The whole point was you had nothing to do.
Yes.
The idea of, my dad tried to send me to this thing called Super Camp one summer, and it was going to be 6 weeks of, like, I don't know, learning how to be super or something.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I fought so hard that he ate the money he paid and didn't send me. Because I was like, no, I'm not going. And you're talking about going to like pick, going to live like on a farm to pick stuff. And they are actively being like, yeah, let's go do it.
Oh, God. So teens were shipped all over the country, most to Texas and California. Carter and his San Diego group were sent to Blythe, California, which is sort of a desert hell. It's literally just in the middle of a desert.
Okay.
There's like crops. It's like
you kids are going to desert hell.
There they picked cantaloupes.
Uh-huh.
So
sure.
So when they arrive, I guess they must have arrived later in the day. It seems okay. The wind's blowing. It's not that warm. Quote, mm-hmm. Then you go out in the field and the first ray of sun comes over the horizon. The first ray. Everyone looked at each other and said, what did we do?
Yeah. Yes.
The thermometer went up like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. By 9 a.m., it was 110 degrees.
Oh, it's just even saying a Bugs Bunny cartoon is like really shows you the age. It's like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
So they're given gardening
gloves.
Come on,
guys. There's basically like little basketballs on plants. Pick them and then toss them to each other. All right. We're going to run the triangle cantaloupe offense. Very simple. Pick the cantaloupe. You toss it to Teddy. Teddy, you put it in Barry's basket. Boom, 2 points. The goal is to get 50 million points by the end of the summer. Do you believe that? What a nightmare. Let's go, guys. Come on.
Okay. Can you just treat us like this is a terrible job instead of the weird sort of thing you're doing about sports?
It's not a job. It's not a job.
It's not a job. I'm getting paid and it's about
We are playing lope ball. This is lope ball, gentlemen. This is what it is. All right. Now we got our center. He grabs the lope, tosses it to the forward. Right? He puts the lope in Barry's basket. Barry, when you got a bunch of lopes in your basket, you go to the point center and you put all those lopes up on that scale. Then we'll see how many it is. And again, the goal is to get 50 million points.
Come on, guys. This is not
a
game.
It's not. We're going to win state.
We're not competing.
We are. We're watching. A bunch of teams. It's a round robin, is what it is. Come on. All right. Get to picking the cantaloupes. We've got so fucking many to pick. It's crazy.
I didn't know this, but melons have fine hairs. That.
By the way, guys, melons have heads of hair.
They have little fine hairs on them that make them feel like, quote, picking up sandpaper.
Yeah, and guys, sometimes when you first pick up the lope, it's going to feel like you're handling a porcupine. That's all part of the sport. That's what's going to make this team so good. Now, what you want is your hands to bleed. That means you're getting closer to them never bleeding again.
So they give them gardening gloves to pick, but the gloves only lasted 4 hours before they fell apart.
What kind of mystery glove is this? That's the kind of glove salesman you want to have. Where's that glove guy? I can't return him. He left town.
Okay, so this is the thing. This is what you talk about, material needs for the workers, right? So they don't have a union fighting for them, which the union would be like, no, everybody needs gloves that will make them. Yeah. So it's Mexican dudes coming up and Mexican women, and they probably know, because they've been doing this for a while, they know other people have, and they probably come up with their own gloves. They probably bring their own gloves that work.
Right.
And these kids have no idea, so they just get there, and they're like, here's some shitty gloves, dudes, and they don't work. So
there you go. The farmers are trying their best.
Yeah. So aside from $1.40 an hour, they got 5 cents for every crate. And a crate's like 30 or 35 cantaloupes.
Okay.
Breakfast was beans, eggs, and bologna sandwiches.
The breakfast of champions. Am I right? Come on, guys. What I like to do is make a little bologna enchilada. Put the beans in there. Have a little bean loney.
It's called a morning fuck you. Go fuck yourself.
You guys are going to need those nitrates when you're in the field today. You guys are going to need that nitrates in your stomach, okay? Like athletes.
So they only got Sundays off. All the 18s only got Sundays off. So it's 6 days a week. Housing turns out to be terrible. Old army barracks, rooms made from discarded wood. Some were in buildings where Japanese Americans had been interned.
I mean, so they were like, nobody could live like this. And they were like, hello.
Well,
we were forced.
So tons of kids, right when they got to the place and saw what it was, bailed immediately.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The second I find out that cantaloupes have hairs, I'm like, hey, you turn this bus around.
So in Salinas, California, 26 A-teams arrived. Not that the company even wanted them. Salinas Strawberries, that's the name of the company, asked for 3 A-teams and was, quote, sandbagged with 24.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Now, I would imagine that they were planning on hiring people who had not come in legally through the Bracero program, and now they're mad that they got stuck with these teenagers. Students. Yeah.
Got stuck with high school students. 24 groups of high school students.
135 students bailed in the first week. One told the AP, quote, "We worked 3 days and all of us are broke." So they teens headed back to Wyoming. So these kids came from all over, and they had come from Wyoming. They had no way to return because the way it was set up was they would pay for them to come, the company, and then when the contract was over after 6 weeks, they would pay to send them back. But if they didn't finish the 6 weeks, well, they're stranded.
So you're just okay. So basically, the company is incentivized to get these kids to quit.
In a way, if they don't, well, no, the company still paid for them to come there. I mean,
the farmers.
No, the farmers aren't, because the farmers still want the crops to be picked, and they're kind of in a fucked situation,
right?
Because they didn't hire the workers they wanted.
Right.
They got these other kids. So parents in Newcastle, Wyoming agreed to pay $2,000 to bring their 37 kids back on a charter bus.
Wow.
But now the bill was due and they were looking at the Labor Department to pay it. And they're saying, look, you didn't live up to your part of the bargain. It was shit living conditions. And they left. The Californian, quote, "A Labor Department official said he knew of no way to get the money." So the Labor Department's like, fuck, I don't know. What?
Okay, so needless to say, things are going pretty well.
A State Department of Employment official said the Wyoming group, quote, "didn't even give it a try. It was a defeatist group."
Oh, they didn't even want to be picking all summer. These kids didn't have the right attitude.
They didn't want to be living in shit conditions. They didn't want to be living in
fucking
kids, just
garbage. They were so spoiled. The amount of times I heard my gloves broke again, it was like, cry me a river. And when you do, throw some seeds in it, okay? Because it'll grow faster than most of the stuff these kids know how to do. They are just useless when it comes to horticulture.
Yeah. So, I mean, the toilets were, like, supposed to be ungodly. Like, it was just... It was fucking hell. Like it was like, it was nothing you would ever work in or live.
Right.
So he calls them defeatist, right? Yeah. A bunch of 17-year-olds are defeatist. Matt McAteer, 18, said there was a lot of fighting and that's why the Wyoming kids had wanted out. Quote, "there were an awful lot of rough kids down there." So besides the food and bad pay and no laundry facilities and literally toilets that are backed up and they can't use, there's other kids who are problems and are starting fights everywhere. So they literally sent them.
Part of you thinks that this is potentially a job for adults. That potentially that's what the idea should be here.
200 who had come to Salinas from New Mexico, Kansas, and Wyoming were gone after 2 weeks. The ones who stayed weren't happy. On June 16th, 100 teens refused to work the field they were assigned because it had already been picked by Braceros. And the company asked them to sign a waiver not guaranteeing their $1.40 an hour.
Oh my God.
So now the company.
Could you ever get a better crash course in America than what these teens? They're like, wait, what? It's like, don't worry, we hired a league. Shut the fuck up.
So now they've taken. And they're calling them braceros here, but I don't even know if they're braceros. Now they're just sending out usual migrant workers to pick a field and then sending the boys to then pick afterwards. So that all the good shit's gone.
Pick. Yeah. Yeah. And then sign the things that said that you don't need to get paid.
Right. So
you're just having a holiday here, essentially. It's just a vacation away from your life.
Right, so they want them to not take the $1.40 an hour and take a piecemeal, meaning just whatever you can pick, then you get paid, like 5 cents, 10%.
Sound good, everybody? You like America?
One boy said the fields were so bad, he was only going to make $11 in a 40-hour week.
Jesus Christ.
All of these 100 kids, or most of them, had signed unionization cards. So these kids in a week are like, let's fucking unionize.
All right. Obviously, we need unions. That is the backbone of... I mean, it's like, you're 15. We're unionizing.
So they've signed on with the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee. The company refuses to listen to the teens' complaints and just fires them.
I mean, which would be a blessing. You'd be like, thank God.
And then they were not paid for what they had already made that week.
Okay, good. So
their coach, Audie Woodward, said they hadn't been told ahead of time about how bad the pay and working conditions would be. Quote, if we had known, many of these kids wouldn't have come.
Come on, guys. I know it's not looking great, but this is an underdog story. We got to dig deep. In the second half of the summer, we can figure this out. We can do this, okay? I got your back if you got mine. Come on, let's pick together. Let's do this. Go Wildcats!
Remaking Hoosiers, except this time it's about kids being taught the worst labor lesson in the history of America.
Yeah. All right, there's one cantaloupe left out there. Just go grab it.
56 boys from New Mexico had accompanied their band director and baseball coach, Sip Senna. Where the fuck are these names coming from?
Also, your band leader? Like, hey, the band leader's going to take a bunch of adolescents to the farm to work for a summer. Sound good?
Senna said the boys who quit didn't give it a fair chance, and that the ones who lasted acted like men.
Yeah, sure, yeah. USA! Tolerate it.
He also said the food wasn't great, and for the first 2 weeks, all there was to drink was coffee.
Yeah, well, that's fine for a child at that age. These are growing children. Their bones need to be awake all the time to grow. So they need the sweet caffeine of the coffee to grow.
The coach had a gripe.
How was your summer, Randy? Well, I'm hooked on coffee, cigarettes, and I hate this country.
I came back a socialist, Mom.
Oh, dear. Your hands are, sir, bludgeoned. Yeah, cantaloupes have spikes. Do you know that?
The coach had a gripe session with the company. Now, this came up several times in the newspaper articles I read. Gripe sessions. I guess it's like a meeting where you discuss what's wrong.
Dave, 100% you need to start a podcast called Gripe Sessions. It is your destiny. This show was created for the show you're about to make called Gripe Session. you'd crush a Gripe Session. That's all you do. That's your Twitter handle should have been at Gripe Session.
The coach had a Gripe Session with the company and government officials, and after that, the kids also got milk and cocoa.
There you go, huh? See what a good Gripe Session does? You guys ready to go work more forever for nothing?
Also, the New Mexico kids' toilet situation was so bad, a health inspector was called, after which it was, quote, improved.
Wow.
So the toilet was so bad, they called a health inspector.
And he had notes. He was like, it's terrible.
Do you know? Yeah. Do you know how bad it has to be to get to the point where you actually talk about what to do and you seek out a government official to help with your toilet?
And he agrees. He's like, "This is not good."
You bring in a regulator to deal with the thing you shit in. That's how bad it is.
And these are kids.
That means they went to the company and they were like, "Hey, man, this is fucked." And the company's like, "I don't know. That seems fine."
We'll call a referee in.
So there was no transportation, so they had to hitchhike if they wanted to do anything.
Oh, my God.
And the kids, I would read, they would, like, go to, like, hitchhike to Santa Cruz. Now, that's fucking over the hills. That's miles away to go to the boardwalk and stuff. So they are on their Sundays. They are trying to go and do as much as they can. They're going to San Francisco. Sure. But they're hitchhiking everywhere.
Yeah, they got to go glove shopping.
In Michigan, the cucumber pickle farms brought in 15 A-teams, 368 boys. The A-teams formed in Detroit never got to work because the farm they were supposed to go to refused to provide barracks.
Now, if you're on that bus and you're like, why aren't we getting off? You know, you're watching that like, oh, please, 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 yes. Like, just watching it go to shit just to go home.
Turning around.
Oh, yeah. We're turning around. We're fuck yeah. You know?
And again, that's because the the Mexican workers would pitch tents and build a camp. And they're like, yeah. We're not building you a place to live. You just, you work here day and night.
You do it. You just figure it out. You make a hole in the dirt or something if you need to. I don't know.
The first morning, the A-teamers were shown how to pick. Quote, bend over with your legs straight, about 3 feet apart, straddling the roasted cucumber plants. And then they'd pull up one vine and pick every cucumber that was larger than a thumb. And then pick up the other vine and do it. It's called stooping. Now, this is what all they called it for everybody. And that's why they didn't have the big hose for the asparagus that I brought up earlier. It's stooping. Right. You have to bend over. And this is one of the things the farmers...
It sounds like terrible body posture.
It is. It's another thing.
Terrible for your lower back and...
If they had unions, they might have tools to do it better or whatever. I don't know if you can with cucumbers, but all the farmers, all the growers say, well, only the Mexicans can do this. So the white man can't bend over for hours. I mean, that's just amazing. What you hear over and over and over
right.
again.
Right.
60-year-old Stan of Brazil said it was, quote, backbreaking. By late July, the government said it had fixed the terrible conditions the teens were living in.
They are now able to shit.
This is an actual statement from a Labor Department A-team co-coordinator. He said the living conditions were, quote, no longer a survival effort.
Oh, God. Is that, I mean, that is, and you better believe there's some spit shining going on already. But that is such a low bar.
Yeah.
They are now survivable. So that's pretty good if you ask me. Progress, look out.
The ones that stuck it out, the kids who stuck it out, tried to make the best of it. Carter's group in Blythe, the cantaloupe pickers, would swim in irrigation canals on Sunday or hitchhike into Blythe and try to find someone to buy them beer. Every group is supposed to have a chaperone around college age or a coach, but Carter just had a college age kid and he would just take off. So he'd show up for one day and then bail for like four and then, and then come back.
Yeah. How was the week?
Carter said his group had taken a vote. If they had taken a vote on the first day, they would have left. But the more they stuck it out, the more days went by, the more they became determined to make it the whole 6 weeks.
I can't imagine having that in me as a teenager.
No.
To be like, I want to show them. I'd be like, I want to be shown the door. I need to leave.
Yeah. Quote, it literally became a thing of pride. We weren't going to be fired and we weren't going to quit. We were going to finish it. The Republicans continued to say not using braceros would lead to food shortages. So now the Republicans are saying this is going to be food shortages, and the Democrats are saying it's not, or most Democrats. Others said Dems would lose the next election. A syndicated column by John Chamberlain, quote, the loss in gross income to California's farmers because of the unplanted tomato acreage should run to $25.5 million. The coming disaster in tomatoes means the pizza vote in addition to the vote of housewives and tomato growers.
Dave, I just want to, on behalf of everybody, thank you for Pizza Vote. Obviously, it is a fantastic sect of our voting public. The Pizza Vote is, I mean, a movie title. It's also so true. Like, and we do, and there's, I mean, honest to God, we should have the pizza party. We are there. It is time for us to finally embrace who we are.
Hey, are you one? You wanted the pepperoni, huh? America wanted America. Wants a pepperoni.
We just want pizza.
You're gonna get a pizza.
Every one of you is gonna get a free pizza every week. That would probably be enough to get elected president.
I'm gonna give you every single. Every one, a man, a woman, a child.
Yes, we're waiting.
A spicy meatball pizza.
Okay, gosh, he's just... I love his policy. Just, I wonder if he's the best spokesman. It seems a little... I'm a little off-put sometimes. It's just very on the nose. The spicy meatball thing is...
Or a veggie deluxe. You want an adventure deluxe or you want a spicy meatball? No, you get a pizza.
All right. He's trying, which I don't see a lot in politics anymore.
Vote a Pizza Peter.
Pizza Peter wins within a landslide election. You can see sweeping the South and the Northeast.
In July, prices of lettuce had risen 29 cents. Wirtz said the rising prices had nothing to do with the labor shortage and was due to weather, and that companies were pushing propaganda to convince people it was a labor issue. In front of Congress, he said, quote, that propaganda was poppycock. So, of course, they're using the labor shortage to justify stuff that's happening, and the Labor Department is saying, this is just absolute bullshit. So by August, the California newspaper wrote, it was hard to know who disliked the program more, the teenagers, the farms, or the government officials.
Good. That's fine. A uniting force.
One kid said he had saved $50 over the summer, which is about $420 today.
Pretty good for a summer of back-breaking field labor.
Selena Strawberry said hiring A-teams had cost the company over $75,000. When asked about good features of the program, a company spokesman said, quote, as much, I don't think there are any.
We've never seen that much feces.
The teens were not good compared to the usual migrants, they said. One farmer called the program, quote, a wasteful experiment. He started with 40 teens, and by the end of it, he had 10. In Michigan, the A-teams fell apart. Some were said to just disintegrate and vanish. By the end of the 15 teams, only 7 were left, and of those, there were hardly any teens on them.
Okay, sure.
In Salinas, there were only 227 teens, which was about 28% of what had come.
Okay. So we're seeing a turnover rate that's pretty high.
Yes. And then there is one paper that interviewed all of the New Mexico kids that came back. Every single one of them had gained like 7 to 10 pounds.
Oh, just built like brick shit houses now.
I don't think so.
What?
Because then the more I started to read about it, the food they were eating was fucking horrendous. So they were all putting on weight.
So you send your teen off for a summer of farm labor, and he comes back doughier?
I'm betting their legs had more muscle, but it really sounds like they put on a bunch of weight. One kid was like, I kept going. I also was going everywhere and eating as much as I could. So he would like hitchhike into town every day. And so it seemed like
keep
they were doing
that. Keep eating that bologna, boys. You need that bologna figure. By the end of this summer, you're all going to look like circus strongmen. Enormous legs with beautiful bellies.
It's also like if you send out a bunch of teenagers, well, that's probably the period of my life when I ate the worst.
Yeah, but I mean, I would just imagine picking all day. You're like, when I used to work on houses, like I would eat anything and it wouldn't matter because I would just be sweat it all out by work.
I mean, when I first read it, I was like, oh, this has got to be muscle. And then the more I read, I was like, oh, it's not muscle. It's not muscle
that's
at
amazing.
All.
It's amazing. So they're just eating the strawberries. The hell are they? Where the hell are the strawberries?
We don't know.
They're gone.
I need to lay down. So full. So full.
There's just a bunch of strawberry stems here.
Yeah, that's how they were coming off the tree or whatever it is.
Josh, sometimes I worry about this country.
So as the date came when the students would be done, the states start fighting over the few migrant workers that there are.
Wow.
Texas farmers called recruiters from other states pirates. Farmer Dick Moore said, quote,
wow, what a you better believe you're taking a break. You try to move on. Are you kidding me? You're gonna tell me there's a guy named Dick Moore and you're just like, we'll just keep going. Yeah, you better.
Yeah, they just put that in the story and no one said anything about it. But yeah, it was.
Well, they should have. They needed someone like me around to immediately flag it as not okay.
Yeah, there's.
Hello, I'm Mrs. Dick Moore. Whoopie daisy.
So Dick Moore said, quote, the California recruiters are the ones going wild. One came down and took the crew leaders and got them drunk, sent trinkets to their wives and all that.
Wait, what?
So they're literally sending down
They are now, so basic. I mean, this is for the migrant workers who are now currently working. They are now valued so highly.
Yes,
I mean their existence is just like you're just like what a turnaround.
As
like,
they should.
I had to make. I had to make my own tent last summer, and now this guy's like, and what other trinkets do you want in your home?
Yeah, I mean, this is, they're valuable, and they are fucking valuable, and they should be valuable.
Right, right. But it's still, to have gone from seemingly no value for years, to now suddenly being like, do you want some Hubble figurines? How about a box? what kind of candy you like?
The Croswell Picker Growers Association in Michigan hired ex-migrant crew leaders to go to Texas to recruit workers. Vlasic Foods in Detroit put down a $20,000 deposit with a recruitment agency to bring in 2,000 workers for the pickle harvest. Only 500 came.
Wow.
In Saginaw, Michigan, teens were brought in to pick cucumbers for pickles. This was the only crop that had been picked using braceros in Michigan. So, of all the Michigan crops, the only one using braceros is the pickle cucumber crops. Everyone else, all the other ones in Michigan are hiring domestic laborers. So again, this shows you what the fuck is going on.
Right.
It's just these group of people have decided not to pay as well or treat people as well, and they want to keep doing it. Now, I'm reading the story, and I can't figure out what's going on. The Detroit Free Press is referring to them as stags.
Stags. As referring to who? The workers?
Yeah, these workers that they're going trying to take from other states. They're just calling...
Stags, okay.
They're just calling them stags.
Okay.
It's in parentheses, so maybe the farmers are saying that? It was very strange. Quote, the Daily Pickle Company looked forward to the arrival of 240 stags from Kentucky. But that's not how many arrived. The field manager, quote, some of the boys got off the buses at rest stops and never got back on. We lost 9 from one bus in the first half hour after they arrived in Saginaw. So they're putting people, it doesn't sound like they're just getting migrant workers who are used to working in crops. It sounds like they're just going to places and talking people into working. Right. And then the people realize it's going to be shit before they even get there. And they're just bailing at like rest stops and stuff.
So, I mean, it's just crazy that like you are in this position where recruiting just random people. I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Although Daly brought in Puerto Rican high schoolers who stuck around the entire season.
Because you ever heard of a loophole, boys?
Because how are they going to get back? It's an island. They have to fucking wait until you send them back, you fucks.
Horrible.
They.
Your problem is you got a bunch of student laborers that can walk home.
Of the 240 stags from Kentucky, they ranged in age from teenagers to an old man of 72.
I'm ready to go whenever it is time. We're ready to do this.
One had a wooden leg and two others were blind in one eye.
Just point me in the direction of what we're picking and put my hands on the things each time and I'll be able to do great for you, sir.
I'm sorry, which one of them did let's say he was going to grab it.
So, Your Honor, Judge, whatever your name is, my wood leg is stuck in the mud.
All right, look, there's a lot of problems going on, and I understand that, but we're going to fight through it. So just pick. That's all you got to do is pick.
I can't. I'm like a pole here. I'm pulled. I'm stuck in the mud.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Just pick the things around you. Rotate a little bit as you can.
I don't understand where I am.
That's going to be a major problem, obviously. You're on a farm. So we're going to need you to take some of those things off of there.
What are these?
That's the strawberries. Those are strawberries. Okay, so we're picking these. We're picking them.
The green part?
No, don't grab the green part. Look, and for those of you who can't see, don't worry about the conversation we're having about the green part. Just pick.
Have you tried these? These are good.
Don't eat the goddamn strawberries.
I can't eat them. makes my skin swell. Everything does. I need to lay down.
We haven't started working yet, so there'll be no laying down already.
Hey, this guy laid down on my peg leg?
Why did you come here, I guess is a question. That's a question.
I needed a job.
Yeah, well, it's probably not the best job for you. Look, maybe what you can do is maybe hold on to the blind guys and sort of tilt them in the direction of what they should pick.
3 weeks later, of the 240, 26 were left. Heinz recruited 130 stags for Mississippi, and only 15 were left.
Wow.
So Wirtz then ends the West Indian workers who had gone to Florida. He ends their stay in Florida.
Okay.
The U.S. Attorney General then overrules Wirtz and allows the West Indians to stay longer. Farmers in California plead for Wirtz to allow 23,000 braceros to pick tomatoes in September. He only allows 8,000. In mid-September...
That's the beginning of the pizza party.
In the beginning of September, Congress tries to vote to strip the Labor Department of its foreign labor decision-making power. They're like, let's take this away from Wirtz. It fails by one vote.
It's amazing to be like, the Labor Department is no longer in charge of labor.
For the rest of the year, farmers asked permission to bring in foreign workers, and Wirtz kept denying the request, saying they should pay more to attract domestic workers. He would allow some foreign workers in certain circumstances. Over the whole year, he let in 40,000, but usually it's like 300,000, so it's way fucking less.
He's also got to be, like, stressed out of his mind because he's probably already seeing that the farmers are holding pretty strong, that public opinion is really easy to sway, and that, you know, the government is going to be influenced by... And, I mean, it's not like people are going like, all right, shit, we'll pay better wages. They're really digging in their heels.
Well, so at the end of the year, there was no food shortage. None of that happened.
Right.
Crops were picked.
Right.
Farms got by. A lot of them went to mechanized shit. You know, they brought in things like that. Others clearly went and hired dudes who weren't here legally. So nothing changed in the grand scheme of things as far as food and anything else. Everything the farmer said wasn't true. None of that happened.
Right, right.
By 1966, unauthorized entry was the only way to work in the U.S. So mass exploitation of undocumented migrant workers dawned in the U.S. and obviously continues today. So the legal program went away, and now the result is
crazy.
Much worse working conditions.
It's crazy.
Much more dangerous for them getting into the country. They're still working here. We just decided to do this.
This country is so good at making you fear trying to make progress because it can so easily be exploited and flipped.
Yeah.
And so it's like in this situation, when you're going, the goal is to make a better condition and situation because you lost the leverage battle, you now have no legal option. So it's just, I mean, no, you know, like entering illegally, there's no bracero program. So you get, like you're saying, I mean, you get rid of the one that, you know, is a compromise. And now you just have the two polarizing ends.
That's right. Yeah, I'll put up there's a professor who did this video, Dr. Doug Massey. He did a video for the Gravel Institute that explains immigration, the cost, the human cost, and what making immigration illegal actually does, which is it actually increases problems as opposed to, you know, fixing. There's no solutions that are being offered.
Yeah.
I'll put that at the end, and I'll put a link if you want to watch the video, because it's really fascinating. But I'll just put up the sound to it. I think it should be totally understandable. So the final thing is the 18 kids would forever have a different understanding of migrant workers. Carter, quote, We know the work they do. They do it all their lives, not just one summer, for a couple of months. They raise their families on it. Anyone ever talks bad on them, I always think, keep talking, buddy, because I know what the real deal is. Hmm. Right, so he got put in the circumstances that they live in every day of their lives, yeah. And he did it for 3 months, and he knows how fucking hard it is. And also what they do for us, which is put food on our table.
Well, and if you look at, look at the treatment during COVID times.
Oh.
I mean, it's crazy.
Unions would help.
Yeah.
That's why everyone's mad at the teachers, because the teachers are the first ones who are able to slightly stand up for themselves. It happens in big cities because those are the bigger unions. Everyone's like, why do they get to be special? Well, they get to be special because they're one of the few places left with the union. That's why they get to be special.
And unions, good union representation is what you need.
Yeah, but we need them. Everyone needs to...
support them.
We need unions. We need organizing for unions. Everyone needs to organize at their local level, whether that's to create a union or a group. Because we've seen what happens if we don't. It's necessary. You know, there's a lot of European countries that have like 99% unions. People are just part of unions, just because you need a counterbalance. And in this case, we're way past counterbalance.
And you get things.
Yeah,
it's good.
And it's interesting. Like, you know, I think the narrative that everyone buys into is that Americans can't do or won't do that farm work. I mean, obviously it's propaganda that's been pushed down our throats for so long, but think about all the backbreaking work that Americans have done and still continue to do. That's what our system is. Like, it's backbreaking, brutal work for tons of people. And then all of a sudden it comes to farms and they're like, ah, Americans won't do that. Yeah, they would if they were paid enough and treated well enough. The way it works now is these people from another country have to come in because they have harder lives in their country. They need the work. They need to take care of their families, so they come here. But honestly, it's like Americans, it's just racist to say that. It's racist to say only Mexicans can do this work. It's completely what their bodies work differently. Like, we're all fucking human beings. It's crazy. It's a crazy thought. But it's the thought that everyone has in America, that Americans won't do that work. Yeah, they will.
Well, I mean, we also just, I mean, this country just has, you know, like such a strong history of, just doesn't want to pay people.
Yeah,
just the bottom line.
Treat people better and they'll do the fucking work. I mean, that's it. Like, it's hard work, but there's tons of hard work. But, you know, don't treat them like fucking shit and they'll do the fucking job.
Yeah, people do it. Yeah. Very interesting, David. Very interesting. All right. I love you. Bye, buddy. Talk to you soon. Love you.
Huh?
Miss you, buddy.
Bye. Where are we going?
See you later, pal.
Sources for this episode, the Millennial Source on Medium article, Migrant Labor Made America Great, History Behind the U.S.-Mexico Border Crisis. NPR, when the U.S. government tried to replace migrant farm workers with high schoolers, and then just a ton of newspaper articles, which you can go see on our sources page. Gareth left. He doesn't care about you or me or anybody else. He just took off. Sorry, I can't hear you. If I could hear you, I would tell people what you're saying, which is I don't care about them. I stopped the recording because I don't care. That's what you just said. All right, bye. And now I'm going to play this little info piece by Professor Massey from Princeton. It's really good. Give it a listen. It really gave me an interesting perspective on all this.
What came first, illegal immigration or the wall? The U.S.-Mexico border is the most militarized border in the world, with the exception of the Korean DMZ. There are over 700 miles of fencing, patrolled by 20,000 Border Patrol agents. Each year, American taxpayers spend over $4.8 billion on Border Patrol and another $8.4 billion on Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Is our southern border really worth all the money and taxes we're pouring into it? Hello. I'm Dr. Douglas Massey. I'm a professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton University. I've been the director of the Mexican Migration Project since 1982. I've been collecting real-time data on what's going on at the border, and none of the conclusions I've reached, to my knowledge, have ever been challenged by anyone. What many Americans might not realize is just how new all of this border security is. In the early years of our republic, there was no firm border line, only a fuzzy western frontier. As the frontier pushed westward, the border between America and its neighbors continued to be blurred. When the southern border was finalized in the mid-1800s, it was still soft and porous, an invisible line on a map that ran through the middle of towns and even houses. In the early 1900s, labor shortages led many American farmers to begin recruiting field workers from Mexico. The work was seasonal, though, with workers coming from Mexico for the planting and harvest, and then returning to Mexico for the off-seasons. Because they only stayed for the harvest, Mexican workers were not considered immigrants and weren't included in early immigration laws that put quotas on other nations. The U.S. Border Patrol was established in 1924 not to prevent the entry of Mexicans, but to catch Europeans who were trying to get around the quotas at Ellis Island. During the Second World War, the U.S. government actually encouraged migration through a temporary worker program. The Bracero program was created in 1942 and steadily expanded after the war ended. By the late 1950s, it was recruiting around 450,000 Mexicans per year for temporary labor in the United States. Everything changed in 1965 when the Bracero program was ended and numerical limits were put on Mexican immigration for the first time. Almost overnight, Mexico went from having access to around 500,000 legal visas to less than 20,000 permanent resident visas and no work visas. But the demand for agricultural labor didn't go away, and what was now unauthorized or illegal migration rose to fill the gap left by the end of the Bracero program. Border apprehensions went from 40,000 a year in 1965 to over 1.6 million in 1986. However, these were still seasonal workers, and the flow was still circular, with 86% of undocumented workers returning home at the end of the season. In practical terms, little had changed in the Mexican-American migration system. But in symbolic terms, much had changed. For now, the majority of migrants were illegal, and thus, by definition, considered to be criminals and lawbreakers. While the demand for seasonal agricultural work stayed the same, what the government did was criminalize its workers. Reacting to this perceived change, the U.S. government began pouring more and more resources into the Border Patrol. From 1986 to 2010, the number of uniformed Border Patrol officers increased 5.6 times. The agency's budget grew by a factor of 17, and hundreds of miles of walls and fencing were constructed around ports of entry. None of the extra border security did anything to stop border crossings. During the 1970s and 80s, the odds of a migrant being apprehended while crossing the border was about 1 in 3. As more resources were poured into the Border Patrol, migrants began crossing in more and more remote parts of the border, and the odds of a migrant being apprehended actually went down for a while. The diversion of border crossings into remote areas lowered the odds of apprehension, but it also increased the risk of injury and even death. For in addition to being less populated and less patrolled, these desolate areas were also more dangerous. Between 1993 and 2010, the number of deaths along the border skyrocketed. Coyotes and other smugglers moved in to capitalize on the new black market, and border crossing became much more expensive. In the two decades after 1993, the cost of hiring a coyote to cross the border increased by a factor of 4.6 in real terms. But the biggest impact of increased border security was that for the first time in the history of Mexican-American migration, the movement of migrants stopped being circular, finding it increasingly difficult and dangerous and expensive to move back and forth across the border for seasonal work. Migrants began staying in America during the off-seasons. As men stayed longer north of the border, they were increasingly joined by wives and children, transitioning from a seasonal migrant flow to a permanently settled population. In other words, the effect of restrictive immigration and border policies was the creation of an undocumented population. Removing the Bracero program made a traditional migratory system illegal. Building walls on the southern border didn't keep people out, but rather trapped them in. Since 2007, the number of undocumented migrants in the United States has actually declined, not because of the efforts of Border Patrol, but rather because of an unrelated shift in Mexican migration patterns. In the last 15 years, more people have moved from the U.S. to Mexico than from Mexico to the United States. This shift was started by the 2008 recession, but has been continued by a change in Mexico's age demographics. People tend to migrate when they're younger. If they do not move before the age of 30, they're very unlikely to move at all. In the last 50 years, Mexico's fertility rate has dropped from 7.2 children per woman to 2.1 children per woman, and the median age of the Mexican population has gone from 16.7 to 29.3, turning Mexico into an aging country. New undocumented immigrants in recent years have come not from Mexico, but from other countries. Today, most undocumented immigrants enter the United States legally. They enter as tourists and overstay their visas. Border security doesn't affect them. And yet still, to this day, there are calls to increase Border Patrol staffing and to build more barriers and to strengthen our borders. Why? No matter which way you stand on the issue, there are better ways to address undocumented migration than a largely symbolic, totally ineffective, and extremely expensive border wall.